What's up, baby? It's Bretzky, and I'm here to tell you that SpinQuest.com is giving out free sweeps coins. All you gotta do is purchase a $10 coin pack, and guess what? They're gonna give you the coins from a $30 coin pack. That lets you play all your favorite games like Blackjack, Wanted, Dead or Wild, and we're talking real cash prizes, baby. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game as we continue social distancing, day five on this show of us being at our homes. I'm representing the south side of town down here in Rutherford County. Darren McFarland, that's me, Willie Donick, over on the east side.
East side, checking in.
Yeah, East Nashville. Chase McCabe out on the west side, checking in
Bell. West side, checking in.
Elijah Campbell back at 1824 Murfreesboro Pike, holding down the fort there at our Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Gents, how we doing?
Well, doing well. No rain today, so I got the morning jog in, so I'm happy about that. Just keeping on. Last night, the family got a little jigsaw puzzle action, a 500-piecer. Tiny pieces, very difficult terrain, like a... We had to work with what we had in the house that we hadn't done already. So we have an old 500 Philadelphia city look. It's like a painting sort of picture from, it's got to be circa 1850 or something like that. I don't know what the significance of the time they took it, but it's a lot of pillars and bricks and water and not a whole lot of easy things to work with. So we worked at it as a group. We didn't get very far last night, but hopefully we're on our way.
What's not far? I mean, what do you think your participation level was? How much do you think you helped the cause?
My role basically was to be the DJ.
The DJ.
I got the next song queued up. I was asking everybody what they wanted to hear.
Okay.
Oh boy,
I felt
the DJ.
Like I gave good energy to the group. The kids worked on the borders, right? You guys talked about this yesterday. The first step in any good puzzle connection is to get the borders going. The Hal Gill. Remember, he was the one that said that, so we had that in mind. Identifying, this is a 500-piece puzzle, but the pieces are really small, so it was hard to identify all the border pieces, but that's what we pretty much got done. We got the border done last night, starting to hone in on some of the other things.
All right, so some work to be done, but you laid, I guess, the foundation last night, safe to say?
The foundation, that's a very important thing, laying the foundation.
Okay,
Chase, I think that's what you have to do these days. Mm-hmm. Lay a lot of foundation.
Yes. What did you do last night?
I watched some TV. I've been kind of binge watching the show New Girl, which I know came out several years ago and is now no longer on TV. But I'm late to the party, and it's on Netflix, and it's funny. So that's what I did.
Okay,
I watched some of that.
All right. Anybody check in on OJ last night?
I didn't because
I did not. Tell us.
Oh, man. I got some good OJ watching in again. Of course, I watched it the first go around, but it's been several years, right? I mean, he was still incarcerated when that first came out. True? Was this not the first time they've aired it
now,
since he's been out?
Which one are you talking about the 30 for 30 you watched, or was it the TV show?
Yeah, the 30 for 30.
That Cuba Gooding Jr. was in.
Yeah, no, the 30 for 30. They showed 4 hours of it last night.
Oh,
with more to
okay.
Come.
That won an Oscar, right? That 30 for 30 actually won an Oscar.
Yes, it did. Mm-hmm.
So I actually just watched it because it's on ESPN Plus, so you can go back and watch it, anytime. So I watched it a couple months ago because I was kind of on an OJ kick and watched that and watched the Cuba Gooding Jr. And so I didn't see it last night, but it's cool that they're re-showing it. And I think they do that periodically. I think back in the summer they even showed it some. So it's good. It's very well done.
Oh, it's very well done. I mean, I lived it and went through it, but obviously was really, really young or a lot younger, and you don't remember the finer details than going back and watching a lot of the stuff. And then some of the stuff you had no clue. You're right. This is just a more in-depth of just his life. And you just shake your head, right? I mean, he had life right in the palm of his hand. I mean, he was on top of the world for a good while, and I think this one you just have to chalk up to he was somebody that didn't know how to handle his fame and fortunes. A lot of that, right? I mean, it sounds like just massive ego and just how, you know, he just felt like everything was owed to him, and he was OJ. I mean, some of the stuff they talk about where he's like, they're going to go to a restaurant, and, you know, well, we can't get to that restaurant. It's L.A., man. That's the hottest restaurant in town. And he's like, we don't have reservations. Do you have reservations? No, I don't have reservations. Well, how do you think we're going to eat dinner there? And he just, like, points to his face, like, man, I'm OJ.
I'm OJ.
Come on, man. Come on. You know, I mean, it's like, oh, okay. So he definitely got caught up in his fame, and you know, and then he ended up, he's just a bad dude. If you unless you believe he's innocent, and I don't know how many people believe that, but yeah, it's just crazy. I haven't seen it since it first came out, and so I checked it out a lot last night. I didn't watch the whole thing. Like I said, they aired 4 hours, so I guess that was the first two episodes. I watched well over half of the first two episodes.
Yeah, and
so
now
it's a 10-hour thing, if I remember correctly, right? It's 10 hours, 5 parts, and I will tell you, if you want to jump in and kill some time, which I think we're all in that mode at one point or another, there's going to be a day or two here that you have, you will get sucked in, because there's so many facets to it. You just hit on some of the early themes.
That's
just
that
the theme of the
stuff.
First couple. Mm-hmm. Then you find yourself watching the trial itself, and then what's underrated almost is the aftermath when he gets out of prison, right? That is so bizarre. The period of time between the time he gets acquitted and the time he ends up going back to jail for something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they do a good job of showing that part of, you know, what happened in Vegas and the whole reason that he got in, and you know, even Marcia Clark is talking about the sentence that he got for that and how it was way, way too much, but it was the judge, you know, essentially doing all she could do to make up for what happened in the murder trial. But I'd like to see more of what happened with, like, his inner circle, because, you know, Kardashian and Al Collins, you know, they all pretty much, they realized that, okay, he's not a good dude, and so they separated themselves pretty quickly. I would love to learn more about that.
Well, the other thing is that if you wanted to do it a little more in a TV show kind of way, there's The People versus O.J. Simpson. I don't know if you guys have ever seen that one.
Yeah, I watched that.
Cuba Gooding Jr. plays O.J. It's a John Travolta actually plays Shapiro, the lawyer for O.J., or one of the lawyers for O.J. It's pretty interesting.
The first one to turn his back on him. As soon as the trial is over.
Yeah, it's pretty compelling, that one, too.
Yeah, the only problem with that is anytime I see Robert Kardashian, or Bobby, as they call him, I just think about Ross of Friends, because it's David Schwimmer, and that's who played Ross on Friends. And just
right.
It doesn't work.
Yeah.
Yep. So, anyway, I haven't even looked if they're showing that again tonight. I guess they're going to continue on. Let me see. Does not look like they are. So I don't know when's the next installment. So I guess they're not following up tonight with, I guess, maybe parts 3 and 4. I'll have to keep looking for that. But I did check out a lot of that last night. Noah Syndergaard, not good news for your Mets, depending on what kind of baseball season we have. It's weird to have the Mets already taken a big blow before they've even started any games, but Noah Syndergaard, add him to the list of big-time pitchers, Severino, Chris Sale, guys that will be lost for the 2020 season, whatever that 2020 season is, they will be lost because they're all going to have Tommy John surgery.
Well, yeah. That was not an easy thing to stomach, for sure, if you're a Mets fan like me. But it does make you wonder, was he going to try to pitch through it as far as he could under normal circumstances? I wonder that, too, with Chris Sale. And, again, the question that comes to mind, too, is, you know, they announced this in the atmosphere where you have so many people saying,
is this
you have
essential
to put off elective surgeries?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is this essential? You know, that's You know, if you're a Mets fan, you'd say, oh, yeah, man, we got to get that done. Make a place for Noah to get that done. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it's you do have to stop and pause. But from a baseball end, you know, just another chapter in a tough run for the Mets here. It's too bad. But you do wonder how long the season is going to go. And so, you know, is it easier to cope with a guy, one of your horses down in a shortened season? Probably so, right? There's more ways maybe to make up for it, but it's still going to be a tough blow.
I mean, did this come out of nowhere? I mean, where did Sale, Severino, I mean, Severino barely, what, he pitched like three games last year? Sale, they shut him down in early August. Like, you could see almost the writing on the wall for those guys, but did this take people by surprise? I don't remember Syndergaard being a guy that we should be watching out closely to see if they're going to have to shut him down. Did I miss that?
No, I was completely taken aback. He was the only guy among the Mets guys. Jacob DeGrom had it years ago. Steven Matz had it years ago. Zach Wheeler, who's not there anymore, had it a few years ago. And that was the thing you admired about Syndergaard. He looked like he was getting through it. Like, you know, there's some guys like Max Scherzer, flamethrowers who throw extremely hard, that were just freaks of nature, that their elbow could sustain it. And you were wondering if Syndergaard could do that, but he's the next victim. You know, a guy that just, you know, he throws 98, 99 miles an hour day after day or start after start. The human body, as big and strong as he is, sometimes just can't take the workload. But no, there were no signs, right? He's been pretty durable, and there was not
surprise.
Like he missed starts last year for a sore elbow. I didn't see any warning signs there.
When I saw breaking news yesterday, I was like, what? You know, Syndergaard, okay. Like I said, Sale and Severino, I had them on my – I was just surprised I didn't have Syndergaard on my fantasy team. I mean, that would just be fitting because, you know, I like to complain about having all those injured guys on my
– Somebody you know
team.
Did.
Oh, was that I thought there was a chance. In fact, didn't he get traded to you on the guy's trip in June?
Yeah, I think.
Didn't
it
that
was
happen?
That.
Wasn't that for a Bryce Harper trade?
Yep.
That's what I thought.
Oh. And you saved him?
Yeah, he was going to be our keeper.
Oh no! Well, he was going to be. Is there going to be a dispensation?
Well, yeah, because I mean, one, we haven't even. Who knows?
Right, so we've delayed our draft, obviously. And so unless you've already had your draft in your league, yeah, I guess you could reset keepers if you have any mercy. There are some leagues where it's like, hey, tough luck, man.
Yeah,
that's your keeper.
That's no good. I forgot. I thought about that.
I just wonder how many of these guys, you know, have made this decision based upon they don't know how long they're going to be out.
It's a fair question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say, like, okay, maybe it's something he could play through. Well, now the season may not even start till July, and he's like, well, you know what, I'm just going to get a head start on this so I'm ready for next year.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this is a crazy notion that if somebody felt like, you know, I could – probably tough it out this season, but you know, it's still uncertain. I think I need that, whatever. If they feel like they need it, I mean, if there was ever a time to do it, this year is the year, because I think we're looking around going, baseball will be lucky. I mean, to me, the way I look at it, 80 to 100 games is like their ceiling to get in this season. That's what I believe. I don't know if you guys feel differently, but I would cap off the ceiling at best case scenario for Major League Baseball this year would be 80 to 100 games in their regular season.
And speaking of that, I think this all ties in to that number, Darren. How long are they going to give the pitchers to ramp back up safely? I saw an interesting video. I don't know if you guys saw it. I retweeted it. Sonny Gray just going out and throwing a ball up against a pitch back, you know, a little, you know, springy thing that springs the ball back to you. There's different names for it. We used to call it the pitch back or whatever. But, you know, how much throwing can the pitchers do? I mean, you're by yourself. I guess if you have somebody to throw to, one person, you could say that's okay. But everybody's going to be different in their situation. You don't want other pitchers to get hurt unnecessarily because they were trying to get back too quick to pitch in regular season games, but that's something everybody's going to have to deal with.
No doubt. We'll come back to Andrew Marinus, best-selling author. He will join us next on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Doors bringing us back here on Darren Donick and Chase here on this Wednesday. Tim Hasselbeck, our weekly chat with him coming up at noon. The Hasselbeck brothers have been doing a lot of hits on ESPN this week, Tim and Matt. But we'll have Tim at noon. Our quarantine question of the day on our Twitter account, at 1025.
And by the way, Darren, before you unveil the question, we must say that this is a great song by The Doors, but Touch Me is really not the message we want to be conveying, right? Touch me, babe. I mean, we need to maintain the 6 feet, right? I mean, that is the message.
Yeah, you do not. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's very true.
Right. Thank now, you. We do not believe with what Jim is saying right now that this is not true.
Right.
We don't do that. We had a lot
just
of fun.
Just want to provide the public service, you know, of trying to convey the right message.
Yes.
I mean, we're not trying to slip in a secret message to go opposite of what is the line that we need to be stressing here.
That's why I played the instrumental.
And then apparently.
Right. Very good. Smart thinking, Elijah. Make sure you go with the instrumental. But this is not a subtle message behind the scenes.
Well, the Civil War soldiers that are currently live at Elijah's house have not been practicing good social distancing skills. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the program. We bring in Andrew Marinus, best-selling author. His latest, Games of Deception, the true story of the first U.S. Olympic basketball team at the 1936 Olympics in Hitler's Germany. We had him in studio to unveil that not that long ago. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm doing okay, doing my best to stay busy, keep the kids occupied. How are you guys doing?
Well, we all find out what truly our bond is with our family during these times, don't we?
You got it. I've been playing a lot of Nerf basketball with my son, Charlie.
Yeah.
And he's getting to that point where he can beat me, so that's not too much fun.
Did it sadden you to to hear the news that the Olympics, they're going to postpone it till next year? Which, you know, it's hard to believe. I mean, none of us were alive the last time they had to do this. Of course, it was during the wars in the 40s, the last time they had to cancel Olympics. They're postponing this one until next summer. But what did you think when that news came out?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it saddened me. I mean, I think it's the right decision. It's just crazy that we've reached this point. I never imagined that I would live through something like this, but I don't see how you could have thousands of people coming from all over the world to a sporting event right now. So I think they made the right call for sure.
How are things going with the books? Obviously Strong Inside and this one, you've received so much attention, great books, attention to detail. What has been, because I don't think we've done a follow-up since we initially talked to you right as the book came out. What's been the reception you've got from people about Games of Deception?
Oh, it's been great. Before all this coronavirus, I was traveling around the country quite a bit, going to mostly middle schools and high schools, talking about the book, which I really enjoyed. You know, part of my reason for writing sports-related books is to try to get kids like me who maybe only read sports magazines as a kid, you know, like interested in reading books. And I love that when I go to a school, then a teacher or a librarian will come up and say, you know, this kid loves to play sports or they love to play video games, and we've had a really hard time getting them to read, but, you know, they read your book, and that means a lot. And so that's what I'm trying to do, is write nonfiction, true, interesting stories that involve sports, but also involve something more important. You know, so with the Perry Wallace book, it was civil rights. With this book, it's sort of the early days of Hitler's Germany and what the world was like at that point. And so the basketball is the hook, but then the historic role, the social message is there too for those kids. And so I've really enjoyed it. I've had a ton of visits canceled, you know, rightfully so. But I've been off the road, you know, for the last 2 weeks, and all of my events scheduled through June at this point are canceled. So you hope that kids are still having access to books. And I know schools are doing such a great job with their online curriculums, and a lot of bookstores are doing, you know, curbside pickup, so you can basically buy a book and get it without seeing or having to deal with another person. So I think books will get out there, but it's an interesting time as an author where that sort of that side of the world is all shut down.
Yeah, I flippantly said yesterday on the show, times like this, we're doing things that, you know, we just didn't have time before. We get caught up in the hustle and bustle, and everything has come to a screeching halt. I said, you know, it's got to make people like Andrew Marinus and a lot of authors out there, you know, smile a little bit, because maybe this is going to be an opportunity for all of us to go back and grab a book off the shelf and sit down and read it now, because things aren't that pressing these days.
Yeah,
we're all at home, and so
I know, you know, with you guys having me on, that's much appreciated. And I know there's some radio stations. I was on a show in Los Angeles yesterday. You guys know LZ Granderson and Keyshawn Johnson have a show out there, and they've started a book club because they have nothing to talk about, he said, for 4 hours a day. And so they're reading Strong Inside in L.A. right now, which I thought was pretty cool.
Wow. That is very cool. By the way, our question of the day, we had a lot of fun, so I'm going to pop these off, run these by you real quick. So yesterday we had a great response of the three of us tweeted out, you know, some memorabilia that we've got in our homes because we're all at home, and we asked people to tweet a picture of their favorite memorabilia, and of course the response was overwhelming. I'm sure you've got something really cool that you hold near and dear to your heart. I don't know if it's something with the Brewers or yeah, Perry Wallace or something, but what would be your your sports memorabilia?
Okay. Well, I have a letter framed on my wall. I don't know if you guys remember Harry Dalton. He used to be the general manager of the Brewers back in the early 80s when they were good, when I was a 12-year-old kid. And every year I would send a letter to him with my predicted batting order and statistics for the starting lineup of the Brewers. And, you know, it was always like everybody was going to hit 350 and hit 50 home runs with 150 RBI, like ridiculous stuff. But he wrote me a letter back saying he would keep an eye on me and someday I would work in the major leagues, you know, and I did. You know, I worked
with
the Tampa Bay Rays for a year. So I've always loved that letter. I've got it on my wall. I also have a goofy thing. Cy Young for the Twins. Made these bobbleheads. They're not life-size, but they're not little bobbleheads either. They're probably 3 or 4 feet tall. And he gave them to all the coaches on the Twins. And you all know Steve Little, who used to coach for the Twins from Nashville. He put this up for auction at a national RBI auction maybe 15 years ago. And I guess they didn't really bid on it, so I did. And I've got it. So staring at me right now is this almost life-size Johan Santana bobblehead that's signed by him too. I was hoping he'd make the Hall of Fame. This thing would be worth a lot of money, but
yeah,
it didn't turn out that way. Once he got to your Mets, Willie.
Yeah, broke the arm. Speaking of, you know, now we mentioned him. He hurt his arm. Of course, we just had the Noah Syndergaard news yesterday that he's going down with the Tommy John.
Yeah. You know, I should also mention my dad. You know, he's an author and journalist, and when he would interview people when I was a kid, I would always ask him if he could get an autograph, you know, if it was someone famous. And he'd always explain to me, like, no, that's, you can't do that as a journalist, ask for an autograph. But he did an article about Muhammad Ali, and he broke his rule. And Muhammad Ali didn't just sign an autograph. He drew a little sketch of a fight against Frazier or Foreman. I can't remember. I think it was Joe Frazier. And him in the ring and the fans all around, and signed it to me. And so I have that too. That's probably my most prized sports possession that I forgot about.
Mm. Wow. That's fantastic. How about I phrase it this way? If you could pick up one book right now and read it, that's not yours, what would you read?
Yeah. Well, there's two that I'm reading right now. One with the Nashville connection. It's Tyler Kepner's book. You know, it's called K, and it's a history of baseball in 10 pitches, I think, is the subtitle. And Tyler's a Vandy guy. It's a really fun book about baseball. And the other is, it's either called A World Beneath Their Feet or The Earth Beneath Their Feet. I wish I could remember the exact name. I don't have it in front of me. By Scott Ellsworth. And it's about the It's a true story of the race to be the first to climb Mount Everest. There were Americans, Germans, and British mountain climbers all hoping to be the first, and it's just a fascinating book.
Talking to Andrew Marinus, author of a couple books, local writer here. And Andrew, I'm wondering, I've sent you some of the YouTube access that anybody can get of some of your favorite Brewer teams from those early 80s that you mentioned there. You've got time to watch the entire 1982 ALCS now against the Angels from start to finish with Keith Jackson on the call. You can do it now. You can relive those
days. I got to do it. So it's funny you said that. Last night, for the first time since 1982, I watched the Brewers-Orioles last game of the regular season where they were tied and the winner would win the division. And it took place in Baltimore. I was a Brewers fan. My dad and I, every time the Brewers came to town to go up to Baltimore to see those games, that was a four-game series. The Brewers only had to win one of them to win the division. We had tickets to the first three games. Brewers lost all three of them. I was a 12-year-old kid, just like as depressed as you could possibly be. And I remember sitting there watching that game on Sunday, which we didn't have tickets to on TV, and the Brewers obviously won that game. So I watched that on YouTube last night, and it was so much fun. Like you said, not just to see the Brewers and their great blue road uniforms, but to listen to Keith Jackson and Howard Cosell on the call. That was a lot of fun. I also watched the Georgetown-Houston NCAA championship game. Living in D.C., we were Georgetown fans at that time, and that was the first time I'd rewatched that game since it was played in 84.
I enjoy doing these things. I know as a historian, you do as well. Some people aren't as big on that, but we certainly have time to do that. Now, I'm curious too, Andrew, my kids right now are in different areas of the house, as well as Aaron. Aaron says to say hi. She's in a different sector trying to do some right. work herself. But there are some schools that are trying to, in some form, do some online stuff. My brother does this for a living up in the New York area. You know, media as a teaching tool is basically how you would say it. You've done a lot of this, you know, just going from school to school to introduce your book. I'm wondering if there's any schools out there that, you know, in some Skype method or something, they could have you virtually, you know, talking to a group of people about your book and that sort of thing down the stretch of this school year.
Yeah, I think that'll happen. I've heard from a couple schools that I was scheduled to visit, one in Wisconsin, that said they would like to do something like that on the same day that I was supposed to be there. And I would love to do things like that. If there's anybody listening that as a teacher or has a kid in school that maybe is supposed to be studying World War II or U.S. Civil Rights era, I could talk about either one of my books. Be happy to do it with any sort of Google chat or Skype or Zoom or whatever works for a classroom or for a school. There's also, I tweeted this out yesterday, an organization called School Library Connection had already created a great teacher's guide to go along with Games of Deception. It has videos related to the 36 Olympics, other books that students can read that are related to that topic. And so if people go to my Twitter account, they can see the link to that with a lot of online resources.
All right, I got one for you. Yesterday we had Joe Fisher on, and we were telling our favorite Woody Woodenhofer stories, you know, the brilliant football mind on the defensive side. Always was good for some laughs, for sure, as Joe shared some of his favorites. So you were working in the sports information department, the media relations, as everybody knows it now, before you went to the Rays. What's maybe your favorite memory of Coach Woody?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just in general, he sort of harkens back to a time when it seems like coaches had so much character, you know what I mean? And weren't necessarily, they weren't on Twitter or Facebook. They didn't have to worry about like everything they said or did getting out there to the whole world. So I don't know if somebody like Coach Woody would really make it in today's highly scrutinized era. But I just remember him being just a friendly, fun-loving guy who was a defensive wizard. I mean, those teams, we had no offense at Vanderbilt, but we were still in every game because of the defense. I think my biggest memory that stands out is actually not that positive, but it's when we almost beat LSU and we're going for two at the end of the game and got a delay of game. And then during that penalty came out and got another delay of game and then got the extra point ultimately blocked. That's sort of my strongest memory of the Woody era. On a positive sense, I know that my mom came to a practice once And Woody drove her around in a golf cart and made her feel like she was the most special person there at that practice that day. So I appreciated the way he took care of her.
He loved that golf cart. There's no question. He was all over that golf cart.
He did.
We're talking to Andrew Marinus, best-selling author. And Andrew, as I listen to this conversation, you know, I think the thing that stands out to me and the question that comes in my mind is, as we go down memory lane and whether we're reading books, your books, or watching old sports, do you think that we come out of this as better sports fans because maybe we appreciate some of the moments that we've forgotten?
I think that's a great point. Yes, I think so. I don't know. Do you guys, when you're watching these replays, does it almost seem like it took place in another world or on another planet or something?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like the idea of these 100,000 people just even being in the same stadium together, or was watching a Egg Bowl game on SEC Network last night and the manager's like squirting the water into a player's mouth. And I'm like, all these little minor things that we take for granted that would seem so unusual. Oh, you can't do that now. I think it does make us appreciate these moments, the value that sports brings to our lives, even if it's not the most important thing in the world. It's just a great part of life, and it's a way that brings people together, brings happiness, and creates these memories. And I do think that we'll appreciate all of those aspects more going forward. I hope so.
I'm about to probably start drinking heavily as I've got MLB Network on my television right now.
I told you not to turn it on.
Which game do we have? What do we have today?
Game 7, 2016 World Series, bottom of the ninth, tied at 6. Or actually going to the top of the 10th.
Yeah, the freaking rain delay's coming, right?
Yeah, and
yeah, they're past the rain delays. So they skip
well, that
past.
Is the beauty of the replays. You can skip the rain delays.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Right. My problem as a Brewers fan is, how long is it going to take before they start showing Brewers replays on MLB Network? You know, I mean, they're going to show every Yankees-Red Sox game ever before they get down to the Brewers.
Oh, great. Like, I didn't remember a base hit to start the 10th. Gosh. This is going to be painful.
Maybe
this...
they'll show some Packers games. I'm lucky I'm a Packers fan.
Andrew, continued success with the books. You have an idea of what's next?
Actually, yeah. This downtime has been good for that. I'm finishing up my next book.
Oh, you're finishing up. Okay.
Yeah, so it'll come out a year from now. It'll be called Singled Out. It's a biography of Glenn Burke, who is the first openly gay Major League Baseball player. He played for the Dodgers and the A's in the late 70s, died of AIDS in the mid-90s. Really interesting story. It was a lot of fun for me to interview old baseball players from the 80s and the 70s as I was working on this. And I can't wait for it to come out. I've really loved writing it.
Oh, wow.
Who are some of the notable people that you got a chance to interview who, you know, for people our age? Of course, Chase is a little younger than us, but me, you, and Darren are roughly the same. So these are all the players that we grew up, late 70s and 80s, the era we're talking about. These are the players that played with Glenn Burke.
Yeah. So my favorite name of the players I interviewed was Shooty Babbitt from the Oakland A's. And what's crazy about Shooty Babbitt, like, that's a name you totally remember, right? He played less than one major league season. And I mean, I couldn't remember names of guys in the last 10 years that played parts of one season, but Shooty Babbitt to me is like he played 10 years in the major leagues. I talked to Mike Norris, a pitcher for the A's. On the Dodgers, the biggest names were Davey Lopes and Dusty Baker. And my favorite interview was with Dusty Baker. He was, at that point, it was before the Astros hired him. He was scouting for the Giants in Asheville, North Carolina, watching a minor league game. And he said that would be the best place to meet him. So I drove over to Asheville, and he said I had an hour. We ended up talking for almost 3 hours. Hotel, great stories about playing with the Dodgers, about Tommy Lasorda. One thing about Glenn Burke is that he and Dusty invented the high five together. So he told me that whole story. It was the game of the 1977 season. The Dodgers already had three guys that had hit 30 homers. Dusty Baker had 29. J.R. Richards pitching for the Astros, and Dusty has to hit one off J.R. Richards, four players with 30 home runs. And so, just like out of a movie, it's not his last at-bat, but his next to last at-bat, Dusty Baker, finally he hits the home run, and Glenn Burke comes running out of the dugout with his hand up in the air, and Dusty slapped it, and the Dodgers had a picture, and they sort of coined the term high five and used that as their marketing phrase, you know. And so that was a moment in baseball history that Dusty was able to tell me about.
Wow. Good stuff, Andrew. Really appreciate the visit. Well, we will definitely talk to you before the new book comes out a year from now. But thanks for doing this. You guys be safe, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, sounds good. You all too. Take care.
All right, that is Andrew Marinus, best-selling author, the latest one, Games of Deception, the true story of the first U.S. Olympic basketball team, the 1936 Olympics in Hitler's Germany. Of course, his first big, big hit, Strong Inside, the story about Perry Wallace. I have tweeted out, guys, a picture, a fuzzy picture of the shirt I am wearing today. We'll discuss on the other side. I want you guys to look at it and see if you have any guesses. And we'll also throw out our question of the day. We had so much fun with it yesterday. And a Titans wide receiver has signed with somebody. Was it the Titans or somebody else? We'll tell you about that, too. On the other side, Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll talk to Tim Brando to kick off the second hour of the program. Tim Hasselbeck at high noon, his weekly chat with us. I have tweeted out a picture, a fuzzy picture, guys, of my shirt as things are crumbling in Game 7 in Cleveland with the Indians and the Cubs. I have a Nashville sports team on my shirt. It's either a current or former Nashville sports team that I am wearing today, and I'm asking people to guess what's on my shirt. Have you guys
taken
a look
we're
at the
at
picture
on Twitter now? Yeah, I looked at it. Do you want me to get like? Do you want me to guess now?
No,
on
I
the
just
air?
Just do. Do you have any? Do you have any? Is there anything that comes to? I mean, you don't have to even throw anything out there, but do you think you know? Do you think you have an idea?
I may have an idea.
Okay. I just want you guys to look at it.
I mean, this is tough because there's not much
this is
there.
A scrambled picture.
Yeah, I know. That's the first clue. There'll be another one here in a little bit. It'll get a little
okay,
the picture
I'm gonna
will get a little
clue.
Clear.
I mean,
by the way, it's very well done with the I like the graphic. You got the game logo. So tell Lauren she did a good job with that.
Yeah.
That's good.
Well, you know exactly where it came from. I will. I'll pass that along.
Now, let me say this at the start, okay? I'm looking at this picture. Unless you have worn this shirt before, if you can guess the shirt right now with the picture that we're seeing, you're a genius. I don't know how else to say it. How in the world could you guess what this shirt says the way it is without a clue?
Got a first couple rolling in. Knights, cats. All very, very good guesses.
So if somebody gets it on the first clue, are you going to reveal the answer, or are you just going to let it go for a little bit? Okay.
Yeah. I don't really know. You know, people could just throw everything out there. I mean, eventually you'll stumble on. But, you know, I've got different phases, and the picture will get a little bit clearer, and then we'll see what frame it takes for you guys to nail it. Sound good?
Sounds like a plan.
Tajae Sharpe, we talked about him yesterday. And this week, in fact, on Monday, we talked about him with Teron Davenport, and he did not feel like Tajae was coming back. Well, he would be correct because Tajae Sharpe is not coming back. According to Ian Rapoport of NFL Network, he has signed a one-year deal with the Minnesota Vikings. So they lose Stephon Diggs, and so now I guess he will – I don't know what he will be. Is he? I don't think he'll be the two. I mean, Thielen is the number one.
Well, they lost Laquon Treadwell, too.
They did.
So, I mean, they had a need at that position. I think that's a good move for him. Like you said, I don't know exactly what his role is going to be. But I know in talking to him after the AFC Championship game, you could hear the frustration that he felt like he could do more for this offense and there just wasn't room. I mean, once Adam Humphries came back, I mean, where were you going to put Tajae Sharpe? And so I think this is a good move. I had said, you know, that I agreed with Teron that I didn't think he'd be back, and So we'll see what he can do in Minnesota. 1 year prove it deal. See how he fits in that offense. But I like it. Good for him. Good for Tajay.
He played so well last year. He made some key catches. And I did wonder if there was the right price that he would come back to the Titans. I don't know if this is more motivated of the Titans just are ready to move on. They think they can find somebody that is just as good or better at a lesser price. Or this is Tajay Sharpe looking to get somewhere else to where maybe he can play a bigger role. Or maybe it's a little bit of both.
Well, I don't see how anybody or how Tajay Sharpe could probably not want to play a bigger role. I mean, I don't know what exactly, again, what's his role going to be in Minnesota. I don't know how much bigger it's going to be. I don't think he's going there to be the number two, but right now, the way he
currently... No, he could be a slot guy. Possibly.
I don't really know about that. I don't know if Tajay's would be that role. I don't know.
I mean, they don't have much on the roster outside of Adam Thielen. I mean, now that they traded Diggs, so they're going to find a role for him.
Yeah, roles are going to change outside of Thielen regardless because of the Diggs trade, so that creates competition. So for Sharpe, that's probably an attractive thing for him.
No doubt about it. Right now I've got the current odds according to Sportsline. The Sportsline odds makers of who has the best shot of landing Jadeveon Clowney. Do you guys care to guess who's the favorite?
Sure.
I'm just going to go right out on a limb and say the Titans are the favorite.
I'm going to say Seattle is still the favorite.
Seattle is indeed the favorite at minus 120.
Okay.
Who's second?
That's where I'd put the Titans.
Yeah, I'll stay with the. I mean, if I guess them first, I got to guess them second, right?
Yeah.
Jets second plus 300.
Really?
By the way, the Jets yesterday.
The Jets
lost
would be famous
Robbie
for
Anderson.
Spending, overspending to get the free agent. They have been in that category many times before, so that's the answer reason.
Yeah, Robbie Anderson went to Carolina. Is that right?
I saw a 2-year deal.
Carolina. That's a good pickup for that offense.
Yeah, I mean,
Teddy B.
Right now, he's going to be their number one, right? Two,
yeah,
one or two.
And the Jets are signing or have signed Breshad Perriman, formerly of Tampa. So they brought in Perriman after Robbie Anderson left.
Perriman's that hadn't been his only stop. He's been around.
Yeah, he's a dream.
Titans are third at plus 400.
Okay.
So Seahawks minus 120, Jets plus 300, Titans plus 400, Giants plus 700, Ravens come in as the long shot at plus 1,000. So they still believe that Clowney, the Seahawks is still, they are the favorite. It was interesting, they referenced in here that the Giants placed the franchise tag on defensive end Leonard Williams, and that is for $16.1 million a year. You do wonder, you know, like what is, we talked about this a lot, like what is going to be the right number for Clowney? I mean, obviously Clowney's got his number, but it's very clear that the teams are not willing to give him his number or he'd be signed. And so every day that goes by, every week that goes by, he's going to have to come down, I would think. And I guess at some point, too, he's got to figure out where does he want to be? Where does he think is his best fit? What makes sense to him? I don't know how anybody could ever think the Jets make sense to them, right? If you're talking about just going to a good place. I mean, the Jets are just traditionally always a hot mess. But maybe he doesn't care about that. I don't know what he cares about. I don't know if he cares about winning. I don't know if he cares about how much, you know, the dollar amount is, a little bit of both. I don't know what his mindset is.
This is what I think. This is not what I know. This is what I think. I feel like he's chasing the money. That's what he wants right now. He wants to get the most that he possibly can. And to an extent, I get that because you don't have a big window to be able to get that kind of payday. So I think that if you're John Robinson and you're the Titans, you're going to sit there and you're going to go, okay, look, this is our offer. This is what we're going to do. This is what we're willing to do. We'd love to have you here, but if you want to go chase the money and see what else you can get, when you don't get that, you come back and you talk to us. That's kind of what I think is happening. And so, yeah, why would you want to go to the Jets right now? You're not going to win for a while. They got a lot of things that they got to fix, and I think their head coach is terrible. So I don't think they're going to do a lot of winning there. I mean, one of our favorite players, Avery Williamson, is there. That spent a lot of time here with the Titans, and I follow him on social media, and you can tell that he thought it was going to be a lot different, but that's how a lot of players think sometimes. So if he thinks that they're going to pay him the $20 million, then that's probably where he'll go. But I don't see him getting that, and I think that he's going to end up circling back to a lot of teams that gave him an offer that's a little more realistic.
There's no real reason to hurry if you're him. Over time, the question will be, will the offers start going up? Or, will he find out that whatever he's been offered by the various teams is the offer, and they're not willing to go any further than they have? I guess time will tell. The interesting thing would be if he's willing to take it all the way past the draft, because that's when everybody's roster changes, right? That's when you start drafting based on need and holes start getting filled, and then you start saying, well, maybe we don't need Clowney. So I would expect it would get done before that, but I think risky. This next week or two, he could probably wait, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I think, to your point, Willie, I think it's risky to go past the draft, because that's when GMs will be like, hey, we had an offer out for you, we wanted you, but now we filled our need, and we're going to develop this guy, so we're moving on. So that may not be the case for everybody, because you're going to miss out. But I think that's risky if you wait that long if you're him.
It is definitely a risk. That is the cat and mouse game that everybody has to play, right, in the off season. Agents, yeah. Teams, players with their agent, because all this back and forth, it has you. Going, should we cave here? Do we just jump at it? Do we wait? I mean, these are the tough decisions. It's hardly ever cut and dry behind the scene, yeah. Right? It's like you've got an agent going, I don't get the vibe anybody's going to give you what you want, but if you want to keep holding out, maybe they circle back around, they get a little bit more desperate, they come back. I don't know. I mean, those conversations are real. That happens. And they're going to have to figure out what they want. I'd have to believe that he has no interest in to keep waiting and waiting. They have to play the conversation of, no, wait a minute, are we going to really wait till after the draft? I mean, that could only hurt us if we wait till then.
And I feel like
here's another element. Don't you think there's another element, too, to this? If you're John Robinson or one of the teams that's interested up to a point, right, there's probably a number you really don't want to go past. But the other thing you have to consider is, let's say you get outbid. Let's say you're John Robinson, and he signs with the Jets. Clowney signs with the Jets. Who is the backup? Is there another defensive player at that position, or maybe even a different position, where you say, okay, this is my next target. If I don't get Clowney, I'd like to get him. Here are the two or three other guys that I can use that money or a portion of that money and go get. Maybe it's two players, right? And say, okay, I don't get Clowney, but I can sign A and B with that same money and still strengthen my defense. Those are the things you have to be thinking about, too.
Yeah, and I think John Robinson's doing that. You talk about a gamble.
So I'm not smart enough to know who those guys are. Maybe somebody like Teron or maybe even Tim Hasselbeck, somebody who follows it could maybe find who are the second-tier guys that are sitting out there waiting for Clowney to sign before the market price is really set for them.
Well, I mean, you could surmise that Logan Ryan is one of those guys for John Robinson.
Sure.
He knows that he's not getting a ton of attention right now, and so he can keep having those conversations. I mean, that's what GMs do. That's what agents do. If, like, hey, we'll keep talking. We're not ready to jump yet. It's just like buying a car, like I said yesterday. I mean, it's one of those deals. So it could be that, and it could be there could be a couple players, or you know, who knows? But I think we all agree, because we've all said this, that you can't trade away Jarrell Casey in that salary cap and come away with nothing.
We will come back with Tim Brando to kick off the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase on this Wednesday, and we do that next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend, because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.